Why have I asked my electrician I found on Angie.com to bury my pet hamster Nibbles in our yard for me? Because I was so moved by how carefully he buried my electrical wires, I knew I could trust him to bury my sweet Nibbles after his untimely end.
Huh, Nibbles. Gone too soon. May he scurry in peace.
Hey, sorry about your pet, but I just wire stuff.
Nibbles would have loved you like a brother.
Connecting homeowners with skilled pros for over 30 years. Angie, the one you trust to find the ones you trust. Find pros for all your home projects at Angie.com.
What's up, y'all? Summer's got a different tempo. Everything's a little looser, brighter. One plan turns into another. You hear something, you stay a little longer. Next thing you know, you're somewhere you didn't plan to be. It's those in-between moments. That's where the ideas hit. Conversations stretch out, little memories sneak up on you. And sometimes, it's just about what's in your hand. That color, that chill. The new Tropical Butterfly Refresher from Starbucks. Guava and passion fruit flavors with mango pineapple flavored pearls. Yeah, that feels like summer before you even taste it. Funny how one small stop becomes the best part of the day. Start your summer rhythm with Starbucks. Try the new Tropical Butterfly Refresher from Starbucks.
Why have we asked our contractor we found on Angie.com to be our kid's legal guardian? Because he took such good care when redoing our basement that we knew we could trust him to care for our kids, all 8 of them, should something happen to us.
Are you my dad now?
No, sorry, I do basements.
Connecting homeowners with skilled pros for over 30 years. Angie, the one you trust to find the ones you trust. Find pros for all your home projects at Angie.com.
Siempre quiero que mi carro dure más y corra suave, sin estrés, sin rollos. Por eso uso Seafoam Motor Treatment. Es bien fácil de usar. Lo echas en el tanque de gasolina y listo. Sin herramientas, sin esperar. Seafoam ayuda a que el motor funcione más suave y dure más tiempo. Y sirve para lo que manejes. Carro, troca, tractor, gasolina o diésel. ¿Tiene motor? Seafoam te respalda. Millones de conductores lo usan todos los días para mantener su motor fuerte. Agarra tu lata hoy en tu tienda de autopartes favorita. Seafoam. Échalo y enciende el poder.
True Crime Today.
This is the ongoing story of a small Idaho town and its residents, a tightly knit community that hasn't seen a murder since 2015, an environment where one thought they could feel safe and secure until a quadruple homicide stole the lives of 4 young souls on a mid-November evening, leaving far more questions than answers. Where will the investigation lead and how do we get there? This is the University of Idaho Murders podcast. 4 killed for what?
Welcome to the program. Be sure to press subscribe wherever you download podcasts. You don't miss any breaking updates on the story and conversations as we have them. My name is Tony Bruschi. You can follow me on Twitter at Tony B Pod for more on this case and discussions off the air. Today, we are going to be talking with Nikki Egan. Nikki is a investigative journalist, former People Magazine senior writer and author, about the case, to get her insights on this based on her many, many years of experience reporting on crime cases all over the world. First, I want to let you know this, and this is a little bit of old news, but we haven't touched on it on the air here yet. This is an affidavit that was released yesterday, I believe, about the appearance of Mr. Koberger in court. I'm just going to read it right here. It says the initial appearance was held in this matter on January 5th, 2023. At that time, the court set the matter for a preliminary status hearing to begin at 10 a.m. on January 12th of 2023. Due to scheduling conflicts, the parties stipulated to changing the time of said hearing. Therefore, with good cause, it's hereby ordered that the preliminary status hearing will be held on January 12th, same date, but 8 a.m. Pacific Standard Time is the time of that hearing. At the Leda County Courthouse. And of course, we will have coverage for you on that as it happens on the 12th, which is indeed Thursday morning of this week, 8 a.m. Pacific Standard Time on that. With that, let's go to our guest, Nikki Egan. She is, like I said, an investigative journalist, former People Magazine senior writer turned author. Nikki, you have a lot of experience looking at very violent criminals and cases of this nature. Knowing what we know so far, does this case remind you of any other cases you've covered in the past, specifically the psychology of it?
Well, the thing is, I think that we need to know more about him and about the evidence they have against him. before we go too far down that road, because I just have a lot of questions about even him. I'm not saying I don't think he did it. I'm just saying I don't really know. And I just find it really odd that the only DNA they have right now is that the DNA that was in the knife sheath that was found there. And it was a very bloody crime scene. There was a lot of evidence there. So I don't know if they just kind of were under so much media pressure to make an arrest in this case that they kind of rushed their case. And that's basically the only sample they got back in time. But I have so many questions about, I don't know how he knew them. If he in fact did do this, you know, how he encountered them, how he targeted them. Mm-hmm. It's just, I mean, it was a very brutal crime. It seems very, very angry by the fact that, you know, he used a knife the way he did and the descriptions of the crime scene. I mean, he's definitely a very, very angry person. I don't know how in-depth that is of an insight, but that's what struck me. If this was random, it makes it even more horrific, but it looks like there was some stalking going on. But again, I don't know if he, you know, knew them beforehand, had spotted them, or if one of them in particular was the target. You know, it's just, it's an unusual case in a lot of ways. So honestly, offhand, I can't think of one where it is similar to. Mm-hmm. And I've covered many crimes over the past 28, 30 years. So I just, this one has a lot of unusual elements to it, in my opinion.
No, it certainly does. Like there's bits and pieces here and there that may feel similar to this or that, but it's almost a cornucopia of many different historic cases, if you were to kind of break it down that way, as far as what we know right now. Talking about the knife sheath a little bit, and this is something that I was wondering about as well, and I'm interested to hear your insight from covering so many cases like this, saying that that is the only DNA that has been found. That's the only DNA that's been presented thus far in the probable cause affidavit. Isn't there a very high probability that there are more samples of DNA that are, they don't need to release yet to the public. They don't need to release yet because discovery has not begun yet. I would assume there's more samples there, and that's not the only thing that has pulled them in along with the cell records to make the arrest.
Right. I mean, I would assume that this may be, you know, they just don't have all the rest of the tests back yet. Mm-hmm. And that's it, because this guy is clearly not a master criminal. Yeah. I mean, his phone records show he was in the area. Yes, he was smart enough, supposedly, according to the affidavit, to turn off his phone before and after he left the house. But he wasn't smart enough to not bring his phone, because it still shows him within the jurisdiction of the house. So he's not a master criminal. Whoever did this apparently was wearing a mask. But, you know, there's no way you cannot leave some DNA behind in a bloody crime scene like that. And maybe it's just a matter of separating it from the rest of the evidence. Like, I don't know. I would just say there should be ample physical evidence there if of him being there, if in fact that's the case. And, you know, it's just, like I said, it's just such a crazy case, because who was the target? Were they all the target? Like, who goes in and kills four different people? Why didn't he kill the other two roommates? Why did he just kill the four? I mean, up until now, I think we thought that the other roommates slept through it all. And now the affidavit says, in fact, one of the surviving ones woke up and saw him in the mask. So, you know, it's just, there's just so many things that are unanswered that it almost makes it tough to theorize about why someone would do this. Because again, we don't know if he knew them beforehand. Sure. Maybe he just spotted them out at a bar one night and one of the women was the target. You know, someone I know found an article like, why do you use a knife? You know, why would he use a knife, not a gun? Apparently his mom or one of his relatives wrote an article in the local paper a couple of years ago about how we have to stop mass shootings and how we have to, you know, make sure this doesn't happen again. So maybe that was so embedded in his head that that's why he didn't use a gun. But yeah, it's just a very odd, unusual crime.
There seems to be, when we're trying to take a look deeper into what made up this individual, if in fact he is our man, there's little nuggets out there that we've been finding, others have been finding, and some of it maybe not necessarily even confirmable. One of the most interesting things that I found that another person had dug up recently was this message board post from 2010 and 2011, and almost everything points to it being him. Same username that he was using on other accounts at the time, which has been proven. The age matches up. The psychology of what he's talking about really does seem to make a lot of sense. And it's not something that one could just create after the fact and make it look like there's something else here. It was a message post about his own mental health. Have you seen this at all? What I'm referring to?
Yes, I've seen some coverage of it, yeah. But I haven't read anything in depth.
It's very interesting and very telling about his struggles that he seemed to be going through at the time, and noticing a difference in his personality and his character, going out of younger adolescence into older adolescence, and being concerned as to not feeling things, a disassociation, very much recognized at the time. And here we are, 11, 12 years later. And it seems that not a lot was done to help with what he was feeling. But it seems that he comes from a family that is very, invested in psychology and mental health. You spoke of the letter that the mother wrote to the local paper several years ago. Both of the sisters are very much involved in the world of mental health and psychology. And he himself into criminology. It's just a very interesting mix of seemingly a lot of people out there trying to help others in that area. And if this is in fact him, it's this weird mix of, well, he was going down a road that had he pursued it and this had not occurred, or allegedly not occurred, he would have also been in an arena to help others. When you look at a profile of someone like that, how does that flip from going from trying to do good in this world with your skills, with your intelligence, to flipping it the other way, in your opinion?
Or was, he was a criminology PhD candidate, right? Mm-hmm. And that's what his undergrad were. So maybe he morphed into trying to learn how to become a better criminal. I mean, he's just trying to understand the psyche of criminals and, to learn how to do it better. I mean, I'd be really curious to know, we haven't heard of this yet, but if he had any other interactions with law enforcement prior to this, in Pennsylvania, where he's from, where I live, if something's at the district justice level and it you can get it just removed if you do like an ARD program, which is it's basically a diversion program for first-time offenders. But you can get that removed after you complete the requirements, and then there's no record of it. But I just find it hard to believe that if he committed this violent act, that he didn't have some interactions with the law beforehand. So I think that would be really important to know. And like I said, just the fact that he was going for a PhD in criminology, he switched from counseling, I think, at where he was at the local community college. Maybe he wanted to learn how to be a better criminal. Maybe that was it. Maybe trying to build up the courage to do something like this.
That's what I mean, that it was a weird thought, but it is something that ran through my head as well. Was this someone who was so disconnected, but what better way to understand a criminal than to think like a criminal? We read all about that quite a bit these days. Mindhunter comes to mind, and the book that he wrote about, you have to understand how they're thinking in order to actually capture them. Was this some sort of twisted way of really going in and attempting to do this and get away, but then at some point use that that material, that experience for good in his mind down the road?
Yeah, or was he trying to be, he took a class with Catherine Ramsland, who's like a famous criminologist, interviewed serial killers and everything. Did he want to learn more about them to be more like them? I mean, what he did, this was more of a spree killing from my understanding of it, if he did this, because they were killed all at once. It wasn't like he stalked one after the other, but or maybe he considered that a serial killing. I don't know. But, was he just trying to understand more about them to become one? That's the question too. It is, you see this with killers a lot, where they are just kind of fascinated. And, he may have grown up in an environment that we don't quite understand too, where he wasn't, you said he might have had mental health issues. I mean, that seems a given in a situation like this, but you don't know what, sometimes when kids feel helpless or out of control in their own environment, they try to take control in ways that they can, or they take revenge against the people that, or people like them that spurned them in the past. Who knows what his romantic history is? These girls looked very beautiful. I mean, maybe they're the type of girl or woman that had spurned him in the past. There's just a lot of unanswered questions, and we all want to know the answer to them, but it's a little frustrating at this stage.
It's a lot of speculation, obviously, at this point. As you were saying, maybe, these girls were the type that spurned him. Yes, they were very attractive young women. And what I'm wondering about with that is because of the anger that seemed to be involved in the killings, in the stabbings, the very violent typically would be looked at as a crime of passion in many cases. And usually you see that in a domestic situation or someone who truly knows these people very well. But as it appears, as of right now, at the best, not known very well, because none of the friends seem to know this individual, Brian Koberger. The family doesn't have any sort of obvious connection as of right now. Do you feel, with what we know thus far, that maybe these women were simply a representation and they were symbolizing this hate, this anger that he's had or held up against women because of essentially being rejected? I brought up the incel theory earlier in the case, very, very early on, not necessarily one that's active on message boards in the community, but more so as a way of thinking.
Well, according to the affidavit, he'd been stalking whoever, the women at that house since August, because he had been driving by there and stuff. I mean, they all went out at the same type of bars. He, I guess, where he goes to college is not far from where this happened. Mm-hmm. Could he have run into them, met them at a bar when he was out one night, and, you know, maybe one of them kind of blew him off, or maybe he just spotted them there and then started stalking them. You know, that's I've seen that in other cases, you know, with a serial rapist, actually, in Philadelphia, where he would stalk them for months. He would kind of, they lived in the same area, and he would stalk them and get a sense of their schedule, and then he would pounce on them in the middle of the night. So, maybe he did run into some of them, and that's how he targeted them in the first place, but then maybe it became more about who they symbolized. I don't know. I mean, it could have been maybe he hadn't, you know, met them out one night and tried to talk to them and it didn't go well. Or maybe it did talk to them and it went well and he started stalking them. Like we just don't know, but it clearly it seems like he has a lot of rage against women, with a crime this violent, and to use a knife as opposed to some other method that wouldn't have been as brutal a way to kill them. This was a horrific thing for someone to do, you know, the way these poor people died.
What would you want to be looking at to connect those dots on the rage towards women that we seem to see here? Obviously, there's, from what we do know a little bit about, is that he was awkward with women. We've had a couple stories come from people who knew him and have flat out said, yeah, he was very awkward. One of them even saying that they stopped being friends because he started very blatantly hitting on one's girlfriend in high school. And they seemed like a completely different person after he lost his weight and then seemed to have this disassociative way of thinking. Even further back from that, where does something like that stem from, even prior to getting into the world of dating and maturity there? Where should we be looking to help better understand how one's mind forms in that direction? Maybe in this case, or more generally speaking, for individuals like this?
Well, honestly, if I read Mindhunter and I watched the series, I've read and covered a lot about serial killers and killers like this over the ages. And at 201, it seems like it starts in childhood. A lot of times I was sort of amazed watching Mindhunter how many of them had issues with their moms. Mm-hmm. You know, even Ed Kemper, the most famous one from the show, he said the first person he killed was his mother. Mm-hmm. So maybe he's impotent, you know, and that's, you know, maybe that's the frustration that he can't. I don't know if he went in there intending to rape and he couldn't, so he killed them. Mm-hmm. You know, the boyfriend was there. That could have put a crimp in his plans. The boyfriend, right, was with the one girl.
Mm-hmm. That's correct, yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, I think, you go back to his childhood and look at where he came from, what type of family environment he grew up in, what was his relationship like with his family, with his mom, with his dad, with his siblings. Did he ever date? What was he like in high school and college? What was he like, even in the classes he recently took? I've seen some stories saying even when they talked about this case, his face expression never even changed. Mm-hmm. But what was interesting to me, and I don't know if this is confirmed, as he said when he was arrested, are you arresting anyone else? And
yeah.
I'm like, and I don't know if that's confirmed, but that's what I've read. And what does that mean? Like, if he did do that, because that's a lot for one person to do. That's another thing I would say. That's a lot of, you know, young, strong people to try to kill at one time. If you think about it from that perspective, it's going from room to room the way he did. So I don't know if that many had accomplices or what, or if he's just one of these people who commits a crime and then doesn't remember it. I just don't know. It is like, I know I keep saying this, but it is such an unusual crime in a lot of ways.
When we and that's an interesting thought, because I remember hearing that of was anyone else arrested? It does make you wonder, was there anyone else? But at the same time, that seems to be a hard one to digest, that you would have two people that much on the same page to commit a crime like this with what we know thus far. Does it not?
But what was his intent going in there? Was his intent to rape someone at knife point, and then it just went bad because they fought back, or it turned out, you know, there were more people there than he thought, or what? Or did he go in there intending to kill them? It's unusual to use a knife, to bring that as your weapon. So that tells me that rape at knife point is fairly common. What was his intent going in there? I mean, the affidavit, it was amazing to me in a way, because it contained so little in a lot of sense. It almost struck me like, if there is other DNA there and they just haven't released it, then I think maybe they just wanted to make an arrest because police were under so much pressure and they were still gathering evidence. They were still doing their investigation, but they certainly had enough for an arrest warrant. And it took the heat off of them about this case when they're getting criticized everywhere for not making an arrest. So, you know, I think that's one reason the affidavit could have so little in it. But even the information about the roommate waking up, you know, it raises more questions than it answers. Was she drugged? I mean, my second book was about a case where a kidnappers broke in the middle of the night and they kidnapped the woman in the case, left the boyfriend, but they also had tied them up and drugged them. So he didn't call police for 10 more hours when he finally, you know, woke up, and they had told him they would kill his girlfriend if he did call police, but he realized he couldn't trust them and he called police. But he got criticized, like, why did he wait 10 hours for calling the police? So I don't know if she was just absolutely terrified, if she drugged him, but I don't understand why the dog wouldn't have alerted them. I mean, did the dog know this person? And that's why, you know, they didn't bark, because you would think, I don't know what kind of dog it was, but dogs that I have, if someone broke in the middle of the night, you can be darn sure there'd be some barking going on.
Sure. Yeah, I believe it was.
Unless they knew them.
I believe it was a Labradoodle that they had. I could be wrong, but it was some sort of doodle. I've seen the pictures and I've recognized, because my fiance has a similar type dog.
Yeah.
And it's, I mean, yeah, at least they're very personality driven, which I'm surprised that, the dog didn't do much more. But to that same extent of, there is a lot of criticism seeming to go to the roommate that did not call police until several hours later. But there's also several arguments that do make a lot of sense. Was she just in shock? Was she in fear for her life? Did she know if there were more people coming down those stairs and she locked herself in that room? Did she even have her cell phone with her? The list goes on and on, and we don't really know the answers to. So I think it's very it's uncalled for at this point, where all the criticism going at her of what it's easy to Monday morning quarterback it, but
I agree. You don't know what you would do in that situation.
Exactly.
You don't know. Again, we just don't know. But it, like I said, that affidavit raised more questions than it answers, honestly.
If you were to be able to sit down with this individual to do a one-on-one interview at this time, knowing what we know, what would some of the questions be that you would want to ask this individual?
Well, I'd really want to know, first of all, did he know any of these women prior to that night? You know, how did he target that house? How did he, you know, if he in fact did this, how did he, why did he do this? Was he just going in there to scare them or something? And then it went bad, but he brought a knife. Like, what? You know, I really want to know why, you know, why he did this, why he chose this particular house and that sort of thing. I mean, that's always the big question to me in these cases, is the why.
It definitely is. And when you have someone, because we don't know how talkative he is, we don't know what he's going to plead yet. That's still coming up. Well, not even later in the week. They still have to move to that next phase in the whole court proceedings. But if he was to plead not guilty and flat out just deny the entire thing, what sort of strategies could be employed, or what have even you used when interviewing individuals who've been accused of crimes or have been convicted of crimes to get them to open up?
Well, the technique I usually use, whether it's a crime victim or a suspect, because I've interviewed both, is I start with the easier questions, you know, where did you grow up? And, you know, where did you go to school? And you know, what do your parents do, and sort of, you know, try to get a broad picture of who they were before this crime happened, and then get into, you know, the tougher questions about, you know, what happened, and did you know these girls, and why, you know, that type of thing. I mean, you really have to know who he was if he did this before all this happened, before you can really understand if he did this, why he did what he did. So those are all the questions that I would start with. You know, I want to know who he was before all of this happened. Everything, you know, from the day he was born, what his life was like, how he chose criminology, how he, you know, chose his other, the other majors he had. Because at the community college, you know, he was majoring, I think it was like in psychology or something. So there's just, I want to know who he was before all this happened.
Is there ever been cases where the individual does this sort of crime, absolutely horrific, very traumatizing crime, obviously, to anyone who lived through it or anyone who perishes during it? But I would imagine there's almost an amount of trauma as well for the individual who is committing it. And sometimes with trauma, memories are blocked out. Have you ever seen a situation like this where the individual literally has no recollection of committing the crime and really can't speak to it, other than probably knowing that they were planning it for some time?
I mean, I think that happens. I can't remember it offhand. I think that that's what sociopaths or psychopaths do. Mm-hmm. They can just block it out because they really don't have a conscience. I've seen it more with sexual assault survivors or people who have been victims of a violent crime, mm-hmm. you know, where they block it out and they cannot remember the details of it. And I will say, you know, the only one in my history of covering cases this remotely resembles is the Jeffrey McDonald case from 1970. He's the doctor at Fort Bragg, whose entire family was slaughtered, his pregnant wife and two daughters, and he survived. And, you know, he was eventually charged and convicted of it. He's still in jail. But I will also say in that case, I believe that man's actually innocent. It was just, you know, it was just a product of bad police work, bad crime scene. They did not preserve the crime scene. And there were four people he said that were there that night that did exist that were seen within a mile or two of his house at night. But the police zeroed in on him from the beginning and they just wouldn't let go of it. They wouldn't hear anything else. So, but it was a very bloody crime scene as well. And back then they didn't, of course, had DNA testing. They just had blood types. So that's how they built their case, because each of his kids and his wife had a different blood type. But they've never examined all the DNA evidence in the entire crime scene to see, you know, which matched which person. And the federal government has never allowed them to examine all the evidence in the crime scene. So that's why I get very, sure, you know, concerned. I'm just like, it's very easy for police to make a mistake, to feel under a lot of pressure to make an arrest and just go ahead and make one. And meanwhile, you know, people's lives are destroyed and their reputations are destroyed. You know, with the second book I talked about, Victim F, with Aaron and Denise, I mean, the rape and kidnapping, Denise was kidnapped and raped, but the police held a news conference and accused her and her boyfriend of making the whole thing up and called the whole thing a hoax. And she was called the real life Gone Girl in headlines across the world. And then 3 months later, thanks to the good detective work of a different cop, one of the perpetrators was caught. The others are still on the loose. But nobody sees those headlines. There, when we wrote the book, when it came out, a lot of people were like, oh, I remember this when it happened, but I didn't realize they didn't do it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, police are human and they're fallible. And we sit here and we talk all the time, like, how do we make sure this doesn't happen again? But then the police release an affidavit or the police make an arrest and we're off. You know, mm-hmm. and we're convicting this person in the media before they've even had a trial.
Sure.
And I'm not saying that's the case here. I'm just saying that some of what we can do here is be more cautious about drawing any conclusions until we know more.
Tread cautiously.
Yeah. So
what if, from what we know thus far, I'm sure this probably has run through your mind a bit, what kind of defense do you think can be mounted for this individual right now? Or will be mounted in the coming months, weeks, whatever it takes till this goes to trial for Brian?
Well, I mean, obviously mental health, if mental health issues that he didn't know what he was doing, you have to prove, you know, you in most states, you have to prove you don't know the difference between right and wrong. So that could be a factor. We got to see what the evidence is. His first attorney was out there saying that he was going to be exonerated which is really interesting. Usually they just don't say too much, you know, when someone is arrested. So I think they might use, if they don't have any other physical evidence against him, which seems unlikely given the bloodiness of the crime scene, that might be it, that, you know, that the police rush to judgment, that they just, they'd have to come up for an explanation of how his DNA was on the knife sheath, of course, but was that touch DNA or was it actual DNA? They don't have the murder weapon, but again, hopefully they're, you know, doing more searches now that we don't know about and issue search warrants on his home and his apartment there and back here, his car. So there should be more evidence. If you commit that bloody a crime and you get in your car and drive away, there's got to be blood. Even if you scrubbed your car completely clean with bleach or whatever they tell you to do, there's going to be some blood there somewhere. You know, there should be some of their blood and everything on his belongings, in his car, in his apartment.
And at this point, we really won't know when that's discovered until the trial because of the gag order that's in place.
Right. I mean, if they, you know, and again, I guess they'll probably use the same affidavit to search his apartments and all that. But yeah, it will start coming out in motions that the defense files for exclusion and so forth, that some of these, you know, the preliminary hearings that will happen. I mean, I assume he's going to plead not guilty. I mean, how many defendants plead guilty right off the bat? Nobody, mm-hmm. even if they did do it. So this is going to take a while to unfold. And I think that, you know, that the defense will be, you know, let's see what evidence there actually is that links him to this crime. Because a defense attorney would argue, yeah, he stalked them, but he didn't do anything. Yeah, he was near the scene, but he didn't do anything. Not likely, but, you know, as we even saw with Casey Anthony and her case, I mean, they had a lot of circumstantial evidence that sounded great in the media that she did it. And I honestly do believe she did kill her child. But when you look at the actual evidence they used at trial, it was very minimal that they had that pointed toward her. There was no DNA. There was nothing that actually pointed toward Casey Anthony committing that murder.
Mm-hmm. And what it was
just a lot of stuff that sounded great in the media, you know, oh, the scent of a dead body in the trunk. You know, there was all sorts of things like that. But by the time they found the poor little girl's body, you know, there was, you know, it was so decomposed. There wasn't a lot they could find there. So that's the danger, too. If this is all they have, it may be enough to, you know, get him arrested. But is it enough for a conviction? But yeah, if he did do it, there will be a lot more physical evidence to be found that I'm sure the police will find.
Nikki Egan, investigative journalist, former People Magazine senior writer turned author. Thank you so much for sharing your insights with us today on the program. That's the latest that we have for you. Be sure to press subscribe wherever you download podcasts just to not miss any episodes or breaking updates as we have them for you. You can get a commercial free experience through Apple Podcasts on our channel there. Be sure to check that out. I'm Tony Bruschi. You can follow me on Twitter at Tony B Pod. Until next time, for all of us at True Crime Today and the Universe.
Hi, I'm Angie Hicks, co-founder of Angie. When you use Angie for your home projects, you know all your jobs will be done well. Roof repair? Done well. Kitchen sink install? Done well. Deck upgrades? Done well. Electrical upgrade? Done well. Angie's been connecting homeowners with skilled pros for nearly 30 years, so we know the difference between done and done well.
Angie, the one you trust to find the ones you trust. Find a pro for your project at Angie.com.
Siempre quiero que mi carro dure más y corra suave, sin estrés, sin rollos. Por eso uso Seafoam Motor Treatment. Es bien fácil de usar. Lo echas en el tanque de gasolina y listo. Sin herramientas, sin esperar. Seafoam ayuda a que el motor funcione más suave y dure más tiempo. Y sirve para lo que manejes. Carro, troca, tractor, gasolina o diésel. ¿Tiene motor? Seafoam te respalda. Millones de conductores lo usan todos los días para mantener su motor fuerte. Agarra tu lata hoy en tu tienda de autopartes favorita. Seafoam. Échalo y enciende el poder.
Why have I asked my electrician I found on Angie.com to bury my pet hamster Nibbles in our yard for me? Because I was so moved by how carefully he buried my electrical wires, I knew I could trust him to bury my sweet Nibbles after his untimely end. Nibbles. Gone too soon. May he scurry in peace.
Hey, sorry about your pet, but I just wire stuff.
Nibbles would have loved you like a brother.
Connecting homeowners with skilled pros for over 30 years. Angie, the one you trust to find the ones you trust. Find pros for all your home projects at Angie.com.
This is an ad by BetterHelp. Think about your mentors and idols. The people who inspire you most. While it may look like they have all the answers, they don't. But they do know when to ask questions and seek the support they need. In a world that glorifies hyper-independence, it's easy to forget that we're all better with a support system. Therapy is a great way to find a consistent source of support in your life, so you can break free from the outdated belief that seeking help is a sign of weakness. BetterHelp has experienced therapists ready to help you with challenges, ranging from anxiety and depression to relationships and stress. It's convenient, too. You can join a session with the click of a button, helping you fit therapy into your busy life. And you deserve that. You can even send your therapist a message anytime something comes up. Build your support system with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com.
You're up, we're up, it's the perfect match. Now it's on you to make the right decision while you're scrolling in bed. Go big or go home at 7-Eleven with their boneless wings tossed in hot honey sauce with a spot-on sweet and spicy combo. It's available at 7-Eleven and just $5 with 7 rewards. Visit your local Columbus 7-Eleven and satisfy that craving today. Valid through 6/23/26. While supplies last, participating stores see app for full terms.
10 hours on my feet, traffic, noise, everybody needing something from me. My head is spinning. I just need the world to stop for 1 second. But then I get home, shoes off, phone out, and I open Modo Casino. Hundreds of slots, classic table games. It's my instant reset. The variety I want in the quiet I need.
Modo Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Modo.us for more details. Download the Modo Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Modo Casino. America's social casino.
Podcast.
Why have I asked my HVAC guy I found on Angie.com to change my grandpa's trachea tube? Because I was so amazed by how quickly he replaced our air ducts. I knew I could trust him to change Pop-Pop's tube while I was on vacation.
Make it quick, young man.
Aw, see? Pop-Pop trusts you.
I think we should call a doctor.
Connecting homeowners with skilled pros for over 30 years. Angie, the one you trust to find the ones you trust. Find pros for all your home projects at Angie.com.
You're up, we're up, it's the perfect match. Now it's on you to make the right decision while you're scrolling in bed. Go big or go home at 7-Eleven with their boneless wings tossed in hot honey sauce with a spot-on sweet and spicy combo. It's available at 7-Eleven and just $5 with 7 rewards. Visit your local Columbus 7-Eleven and satisfy that craving today. Valid through 6/23/26. While supplies last, participating stores see app for full terms.
Every dating app swipe is another loss. Gym bros, fake CEOs, straight up losers. So now the only app I open is Modo Casino, because at least there I'm surrounded by winners, real winners, thousands of them. While everyone else is in the single swamp, I'm at home relaxing while stacking bonuses, hitting wins, and playing all my favorite Vegas style games. Modo Casino, the only app worth your time.
Modo Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Modo.us for more details. Download the Modo Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Modo Casino, America's social casino.
Hola, déjame preguntarte algo. ¿Quieres que tu carro dure más, que corra más suave y que rinda mejor? Tranquilo, estoy hablando de tu motor. Te tengo algo bueno, Seafoam Motor Treatment. Seafoam ayuda a que tu motor funcione más suave y dure más tiempo. Y es facilito de usar. Solo lo echas en el tanque de gasolina y listo. Déjalo trabajar mientras manejas. Sin pasos extras ni visitas al mecánico. Si tu carro anda medio raro, temblando en el rally, sin fuerza, gastando gasolina como cafecito por la ventanita, puede que sea ahora. Seafoam es tu primer paso sencillo para recuperar ese rendimiento. Para que rinda como debe ser, suave y con power. Y esto no es nuevo. Seafoam ha sido confiado por mecánicos por más de 75 años. 75 años. Eso es mucha confianza, mi gente. Y por eso millones de conductores lo usan todos los días para mantener sus motores fuertes. Agarra una lata de Seafoam hoy en tu tienda de autopartes favorita y pa'lante con confianza.
Four killed for what? Thanks for listening.
Hi, I'm Angie Hicks, co-founder of Angie. When you use Angie for your home projects, you know all your jobs will be done well. Roof repair? Done well. Kitchen sink install? Done well. Deck upgrades? Done well. Electrical upgrade? Done well. Angie's been connecting homeowners with skilled pros for nearly 30 years, so we know the difference between done and done well.
Angie, the one you trust to find the ones you trust. Find a pro for your project at Angie.com.
The impact of myasthenia gravis symptoms can pile up. Plans getting rescheduled. Hobbies being left behind. Everyday tasks going unfinished. if MG keeps disrupting your life, the burden may be bigger than you realize. Learn how to assess and track the impact of your symptoms so you can talk about it with your healthcare team. Take the next step to better understand how MG symptoms may be impacting your life. Visit mgsymptomimpact.com.
Siempre quiero que mi carro dure más y corra suave, sin estrés, sin rollos. Por eso uso Seafoam Motor Treatment. Es bien fácil de usar. Lo echas en el tanque de gasolina y listo. Sin herramientas, sin esperar. Seafoam ayuda a que el motor funcione más suave y dure más tiempo. Y sirve para lo que manejes. Carro, troca, tractor, gasolina o diésel. ¿Tiene motor? Seafoam te respalda. Millones de conductores lo usan todos los días para mantener su motor fuerte. Agarra tu lata hoy en tu tienda de autopartes favorita. Seafoam. Échalo y enciende el poder.